Good afternoon, and welcome to the podcast series, The Global Impact of Regenerative Agriculture, organized by the United Nations Development Program and Rodale Institute. My name is Jameson Irvin, and I work on nature-based solutions to sustainable development. This podcast series, which consists of three episodes, will introduce you to regenerative agriculture and explain how it can improve our existing global food system and can contribute to building climate resilience. I'm joined by Dr. Andrew Smith, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Scientist at Rodale Institute. Welcome, Drew, and thanks so much for joining this conversation today.
Hi, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, let's get started. More than 1,000 local and national governments have recently declared a climate emergency. Could you tell us a little bit about what contribution could regenerative agriculture help in solving this climate emergency?
So at Rodale Institute, we've been conducting a trial we call the Farming Systems Trial for, it's in its 40th year now, where we've compared the traditional, or we might term the conventional farming practices that are mostly practiced in the United States and around the world. And then we have two organic trials. One is a livestock-based system where we have forages and we have more diverse crop rotations. And the other one is a grain-based crop system. We call it a low-input system because it has no external fertility other than leguminous-based cover crops. And I say that because over 40 years of investigating those trials, we've shown that we can increase soil organic matter or carbon in the soil in our organic systems, where we've seen no change in the soil carbon levels in the conventional system. And that's important because some researchers estimate that holding carbon in soil has the greatest capacity to move carbon or things like, you know, greenhouse gas emissions like carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and into the soil. So we think that a shift from, you know, conventional agriculture to regenerative organic agriculture could make a significant impact in sequestering carbon out of the atmosphere and putting it into the soil. But we also need to recognize that this is really a short-term solution. You know, if the entire globe shifted to regenerative organic agriculture, we could sequester carbon out of the air. But if we continue to emit greenhouse gas the way we are, then it would ultimately still lead to increases in carbon dioxide or carbon dioxide equivalents in the atmosphere. But I think that some other things that are noteworthy from our long-term systems trial are that the benefit of putting carbon into the soil is more than just, you know, solving climate change or global warming. It impacts the resiliency of the agroecosystem. The benefit of regenerating the soil, this is really where that term regenerative came from, regenerating the soil to make it more productive and function better allows us to be more resilient and potentially produce food during this period of climate uncertainty. So in the 40 years that we've been doing this work, there's been no difference in yields between the organic and the conventional systems. And a major reason for that is because during periods of drought, we have higher yields in the organic systems. And that's mostly because we have higher levels of carbon so that they can hold on to and store more water in the soil. It also improves the soil structure. So when it does rain, more water infiltrates into the soil and then is stored there. And that's important because we're seeing changing climate patterns and we're not getting in areas around the world, we're not always getting rainfall when we need it for our crop production. So we need our soils to not only store carbon, but also to be able to store moisture for when we need it for crop production.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Drew. That's really clear. One of the questions I'd like to come back to is the question of livestock. So right now, the issue of meat and livestock is a hot one. And yet you've mentioned that rotational adaptive grazing could actually help soil. Could you say a few words about your perceptions on using livestock in carbon sequestration?
Right, and we've reviewed several papers that have come out recently where they've done large-scale life cycle analyses, and they suggest that if we were to convert to an organic or regenerative organic system, there'd be greater deforestation and moving into marginal lands because your organic production systems have a lower yield, and therefore we need more land to be able to produce food. Our research here in Pennsylvania, in the United States, doesn't suggest that. But certainly we recognize that there's been studies done all around the world that show somewhere between a 5 to 25% yield drop. You know, one suggestion from a lot of those scientific papers is that if we switch to a plant-based diet, that we would be able to overcome, you know, the climate challenges that we have. But when we look at from a soil perspective, every study that we look at that integrates livestock or animals into the system in some way improves the health of the soil. So in our farming systems trial, in our livestock-based system, we have a perennial forage phase where we have alfalfa and mixed grasses. And we also return composted dairy manure back into the soil. And we see that system has improved soil health and improved yields and, you know, is the economically the best system. And we see that in multiple long-term trials where either livestock are integrated or a system that has creates forages for livestock and returns the manure back into the soil that benefits the soil health. So that's where we think that part of regenerative organic agriculture should integrate animals because we're also working towards a closed system where farmers don't have to purchase inputs outside of the farm. We know that globally farmers are getting into debt because of the need to purchase off-farm inputs, which is ultimately having major impacts beyond just the environment on farming communities. But we also recognize that, let's say, the American diet or the Western diet is clearly out of alignment with human health as well as environmental impacts. And we certainly need to reduce the amount of meat production and consumption, but we also need to change the way that meat products are produced. And so our concept of regenerative organic agriculture does not allow CAFOs or concentrated animal farming operations. Regenerative agriculture should always work with nature and should always work with the inherent properties of an animal. And so animals are meant to be out on grass. They're meant to be, you know, either grazing or foraging for food. And so a regenerative system should respect the inherent properties of animals. And a lot of research is showing that as we move animals out onto land, mostly ruminants grazing on rangeland or pasture, and we manage them properly, we manage them in a way that they would have performed in nature where there was predators, because we can't just go get wolves or mountain lions to control them. We use fencing, but if we control animals in a way that's sometimes called adaptive grazing or management intensive grazing, we're actually showing that we can put more carbon in the soil by using animals to manage systems. And I would say that one oversight of many of the life cycle analyses that are conducted do not take into account the soil and the amount of organic matter and carbon that are built in the soil. They're really just taking into account greenhouse gas emissions.
Great. Well, thank you. One of the big ideas that was floated at the World Economic Forum earlier this year was a, quote, big solution to a big problem. That was planting a trillion trees. Now, whether or not that can happen, we don't know. But my question to you is, Drew, is regenerative organic agriculture a big solution? If we were able to practice this at scale, could it combat our climate crisis in a meaningful way?
I think it could, you know, and I think it's more than just climate. Bob Rodale, who was the first one to use the word regenerative before agriculture, you know, it's a clear link. There was Lady Balfour in England was the first one to start using the word sustainable to be better forms of agriculture. And she was really a pioneer in organic agriculture and where J.I. Rodale and Bob Rodale learned a lot for their systems. And then it was J.I. Rodale who started using the word organic, and then his son Bob who started using the word regenerative, which was a lot more than just a land ethic and more than just the environment. It included community, it included personal spirit. And I say that because we need to consider that we're basically stealing from the soil. You know, we were basically been taking resources from the land for our own personal gain for the last, well, really probably for the last 1,000 or more years. And it's just catching up to us. And regenerative agriculture considers a law of return where you're always having continuous improvement of the soil, continuous improvement of communities and person. And when we practice a form of agriculture that puts back into the soil, you must organic matter and carbon is really the backbone for improving degraded soil. So that's going to happen. But when it does happen, we're going to start being able to, you know, produce food for people that are malnourished. We're going to improve water quality and make water more available to people that need it. We're going to have better health outcomes because the food's going to be healthier and because there's going to be less need for chemical use. And those chemical use, all these things ultimately probably do come back to the environment because the production of chemicals and the production of fertilizers in agriculture is the most energy consumptive and one of the biggest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Drew. One last question before I let you go. There will be a transition period for farmers who have been following business as usual practices to convert to regenerative organic agriculture, and that might bring some perceived risk or some uncertainty. What can we do as policymakers, as members of communities, as investors, or as any of the different actors? What needs to be done to help in this transition from how we farm now to how we have to farm in the future?
Well, you raise a great point because there's the accounting we do is mostly doesn't include all the external costs to society. We're asking farmers to bear a great burden by changing their practices. It often comes at great expense. And the beneficiaries of that often aren't the farmer, but are all of society. So we need to find a way to contribute. You know, we ask for things, farmers to plant things like cover crops or green manures. Well, that adds costs. So we need to find a place for where we're going to pay for that. We want farmers to plant perennial crops where there's a lot of labor that goes into that. And we've been driving towards a more mechanized agriculture largely because farmers have been told that you have to produce food as cheap as possible and consumers won't pay beyond a certain price. So most consumers are paying way below the true cost of food production when they're buying food. And we barely even put in the external cost to the environment and to our human health when we do that accounting. So true cost accounting needs to be considered. And quite honestly, we probably ought to be paying more for food. And that's where we do think having the organic label has pushed consumers to start paying for the true cost of their food. Governments need to be involved and to support farmers. And that's, you know, a little bit out of my realm. I'm not a social scientist, but we see that organic systems are more profitable. Organic systems tend to increase labor, which means that they improve local economies. And there's been some studies done that have shown that not only areas where there's high concentrations of organic farms, but even the counties or areas around those areas have increased median incomes and reduced poverty rates when organic farming is instituted in those areas. And I think policymakers are starting to pay attention because, you know, that's an increase in, you know, tax base, really, if they have increased organic production.
Thank you so much, Drew, for sharing your expertise with podcast listeners. And to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in and stay tuned for part 3.